Hey folks, do you like documentaries as much as I do? Well, I'm here to tell you about a fantastic new documentary. 21 Years, Richard Linklater. It's in theaters and available on iTunes now. This highly entertaining documentary goes through Linklater's films with great interviews with such celebrities as Jack Black, Matthew McConaughey, Ethan Hawke, Keanu Reeves, Parker Posey, Julie Delpy, Zac Efron, Billy Bob Thornton, and many, many more. I just watched it this morning. I was incredibly inspired and I loved it. 21 Years, Richard Linklater. Available on iTunes and in theaters now. Let's get down.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a great show for you guys today. My guest is Matt Giles. He plays in the Drakes, and he plays guitar with a lot of different bands, but he is one of the front men songwriters in the Drakes, a band of sidemen. And we have a great conversation. My friend Jason Swedberg totally hooked us up. He was out with him one night, and he said, hey, I'm out with this guy Matt Giles. Do you know him? And I was like, no, I don't. And he was like, man, you should get him on the show. He's great. Jason, incidentally, fixes my guitars, and we've been friends for over 35 years. Right? Or no, 35 years. We've been friends 35 years, but he's been working on my guitars almost 20 years. But yeah, he just worked on my Telecaster. He's a fantastic guitar guy. I'm working on an ad for him, but you can find him at jason.swedberg@gmail.com. I don't want to give out his number. I feel weird doing that. So jason.swedberg@gmail.com. If you live in Austin and you need your guitars fixed, he's a fantastic guy. Anyway, he introduced me to Matt Giles at a show a couple weeks ago. I went out there and met Jason at the Drake show. He introduced me to Matt, and we got the show together. He came by, we had a great conversation, and I think you will enjoy it. Before we get to it, let me tell you what's going on with me. Look, I'm working on my pedal board. I got the actual new board. I got a pedal train guy a couple weeks ago. And I've been putting the old pedals together, seeing what else I need. I'm missing a couple pedals. If you listen to this show and you know me and I lent you my chorus pedal or my delay pedal, let me know because I'd like to have those back. I don't know where they are. Anyway, I'm pretty excited about it. I had the power put in it today. My friend Paul English from English Electronics, another great place here in town. Paul English is fantastic. He makes pedals, the 4049, which is on the pedal board right now as we speak. I did leave all of my connectors there, so I have to go back and pick them up right now after I do this intro. But I just want to let you guys know I'm building my pedal board, and I'm really excited about it. Got the Mr. Rockababy show coming up. Then I've got some band shows coming up, hopefully in the new year, with my girl band, with Kathy Valentine and Dominique Davalos, who are also in the Blue Bonnets. Okie doke. So that's my story. I'm pretty excited. I got to see Bob Schneider this week. I went out on Monday. I interviewed a guy that plays guitar with him, Clint Wells. Great guy, man, from Nashville. He flew in, came over, did the show. I went out and saw him play that night with Bob. Great show, man. If you live in Austin and you don't, like, you've heard about the Bob Schneider thing on Mondays at Saxon Pub, it's really fucking entertaining. Like, it's not just music. It's not just the fact that the guy's playing, you know, six new songs from the week before that he had written, and all the guys are trying to learn them on stage while they're playing, but they're seasoned professionals, so it comes off amazing. But it's also hilarious. He does bits with the dudes. He talks to the guys in the band, talks to the audience. He puts on a great, entertaining show. Fantastic songs, great energy, and hilarious bits that go on. It's almost like a variety show. I highly recommend anyone who hasn't seen it, get out there and see Bob Schneider. He's got a Pledge Music thing going on. I don't know how much longer he's got it up, but he's making a new record, or he's made a new record. He's ready to put it out. I guess go to bobschneider.com and find out what's going on with this Pledge Music thing. He's a fantastic guy. Great music. He's coming back from tour in a couple of weeks, and we are going to sit down finally and do Bob Schneider Returns. So that'll happen soon. What else am I doing? I don't know. Just I'm excited about this pedal board. I'm going to go get those connectors and plug it all in and just start jamming out on guitar. Jason's got my Jazzmaster. He just fixed my Telecaster, so I'm going to plug that guy in. I'm going to jam it out, use my Gretsch, maybe my weird Les Paul Jr. I don't know, man. I'm excited about this. I need to go get those connectors, guys. I know this sounds funny, but I'm I got to run and do that. Skyrocket is playing this weekend in Houston, private show. And then we're playing, coming back to Austin and playing on Saturday for another private show. Oh, a famous lady's wedding. Kind of famous. I don't know if I'm allowed really to talk about that stuff because sometimes I talk shit about stuff. So maybe it's better I leave names out. But yeah, maybe kind of a famous lady. And maybe there'll be some celebs at this wedding. And I'll tell you all about it on Tuesday's show, okay? All right, I'm going to stop yapping, and we're going to sit down and talk to Matt Giles. I hope all of you have a great weekend. I hope you're all staying warm. You got the hot chocolate. You got the hot coffee. I've got hot coffee right here. Listen to this. Ah, delicious and warm. To warm the inside of me. Now I got to run out and get those connectors so I can get my pedal board back together. Guitar players, you understand what I'm talking about. I'm jonesing. I'm kind of freaking out. Let's talk to Matt Giles. He totally understands what I'm talking about. Great guy, phenomenal talent, great songwriter, great guitar player, funny guy, Matt Giles. Let's get down. But I sat and watched 4 hours of it.
Sometimes that's worth it.
Yeah.
That's you know, you're taking good stuff in.
How many nights a week do you play?
It depends on how many phone calls I get. So I think I have like 6 gigs in the next 3 days. But like last month, I had 2 full weekends where I didn't have any gigs. It was actually kind of nice, other than the not playing part. Yeah,
it's nice to have weekends off sometimes.
Every
man,
every once in a while
I'm pretty grateful for it when it happens. From Skyrocket, you know.
Yeah,
like yeah. I have tomorrow Friday.
That's great.
Yeah, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna go see 2 of the guys from Skyrocket do a different show.
Wow,
it's pretty sad.
You need to see music on your night off. That's great.
I do. I went and saw you guys the other night.
That's
it sounded
right.
Great. The Drakes are fantastic.
Thank you. That's a fun band. That has been a fun band for a few years, and that's the every time there's sort of a lineup shift and somebody new comes in, it becomes cool in a different way. So I've been really liking having that.
What are you guys trying to do?
Well, initially,
you know what I mean? Like, are you trying to get out there on the road and whatever? Are you guys trying to do a thing where you guys can get together and play?
It's that. It's always been this to a degree. It's an outlet for sidemen to go and play what they want to play, and you know, a lot of us in that band, all of us are sidemen for lots of different people. So you're always learning somebody else's songs, which is great. But sometimes you just want to play songs that you never get to play. So I thought, I got together with Cornbread a few years ago, who's known as a bass player, and I wanted to start a band with him. He's kind of the first guy I call if I want to start a band, is usually call Cornbread.
Really?
Yeah, for bass. And then we got together, and I came over with an acoustic guitar, and he was like, "Nah, man."
That was a great imitation of him.
You know, he's like, "I don't want to play bass unless there's a drummer, so let me just play acoustic with you tonight and we'll go over a few songs." So it was just me and him acoustically, and I was like, man, he's really great. He's a great guitar player.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, and I'd known him for years, and I was like, okay, new plan, we have to find a different bass player, and then you'll be the other guitar player. And then that's how we started. So every Monday we'd get together at Cornbread's house in Bastrop, drink beer and bullshit, tell stories, talk about our week, play some songs, and we brought in slowly we brought in other people to that process. So like, it was even, we didn't even play a gig for over a year. We just got together on Monday nights and came up with this massive set list of songs that we ended up, you know, doing. And
are they your songs?
Some of them are, and then some of them are just covers that we've always wanted to do. And that's sort of the band rule, is like, if you want to do a song, you just do it, you know, and we'll, and if it, if everyone likes doing it, then we'll just keep doing it.
So you guys rehearse?
Well, not as much as we used to. So we used to do that thing every Monday night.
Right, right.
But that sort of stopped. And then when we rehearse, we rehearse at Ron Flint's studio. And that's kind of far away for a couple of us. And then a lot of times, right now, Cornbread's out on the road with James McMurtry for a few weeks. So it's nice to have a rehearsal and everybody can make it.
Yeah.
And then instead of, you know, bringing in somebody later who's been out on the road or whatnot. So. But so we just don't as much anymore. But we'll send out an MP3. And at this point, like, sometimes Ron will be like, hey, do you guys know this song? And then we'll just do it, you know.
Yeah.
And then we work it out on stage over the next few weeks. So that was a long answer. Very sorry.
You see, also, you get to play with, man, your rhythm section is John Bush.
Yeah.
And Ron Flint.
Yeah. I kind of pinch myself.
Awesome.
Yeah, I kind of pinch myself. Like,
I mean, you're fucking
crazy.
Great, too. But they also like, wow, really?
Yeah.
These guys?
Yeah, they're just, it's always been really good back there, you know, and John's been with us for a year and a half, and it's just, he's so great, and he's a great person also. That's the other thing about the, it's like, it's your friends, it's people you know or that you've worked with before, or like somebody can't make a gig and we get somebody to replace them, then it's usually somebody, it's like a buddy, you know what I mean? So it's kind of, there's an extended family of Drakes, of people who have played with us. But John's been with us.
If you guys ever need another dude, I'd come over there.
Oh, hell yeah.
I don't know if I'd add anything.
No, I think you'd play keyboard.
But I can send MP3s.
Yeah, just do that. Just give us some new songs to do.
I could just send out MP3s to you guys.
Yeah, that's how we do it now.
I had a band kind of like that. I mean, I have a band kind of like that. But it's kind of like, I think it's too many front men people.
That's
Casey Crowley, me, and this guy Jeremy Nail. You know him?
I don't know Jeremy.
He's fantastic.
Oh, wow. When do you play?
I mean, we did for a while, and we were kind of serious. It was called Liars and Saints.
Uh-huh.
It is called Liars and Saints. But now we just, it's kind of like, oh, you guys want to play some shows in August? Yeah. And then like, oh, I got this thing. I can't do it.
Yeah. That's the sideman thing.
Yeah.
It's hard to have a band of sidemen. But that's why we played Tuesday nights and Wednesday nights, because those are the...
That's the only way.
Yeah. And then Monday night if we rehearse. So,
do you play other places?
We play at Baker Street once a month. We play at the last Saturday of every month. We played at the Saxon last
week.
What
is Baker Street?
Oh, Baker Street is, I'm sorry, it's on South Lamar. Yeah, I like to do that lick every once in a while over there, see if anyone gets it. It's on South Lamar over by Half Price Books. It's where the old Alligator Grill was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we do that. It's like a four-hour thing the last Saturday of every month. Yeah. But it's
good. It's money.
It's good. It's money. And, you know, it's weird because it's a facsimile of a British pub. And, you know, so it's kind of just kooky that is there at all. But then when people show up and it's your people and your friends and your, then the room just has that vibe.
Yeah.
You forget that it's a facsimile of a British pub.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know. So we all really like playing there. And people have come up and said, yeah, we really like you guys playing here. That you wouldn't think.
Good.
Yeah, like kind of old Austin hippie saying they like that place.
What kind of stuff, when you do 4 hours? Well, you guys played 2 hours the other day. And you took a break?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll do like maybe 3 one-hour sets with breaks. Over
what,
at Baker
what
Street.
Other, what, like, what kind of covers and shit do you throw in?
I throw in like some JJ Cale, Cornbread plays, anything from George Harrison to.
George Harrison is it?
Not George. John Lennon.
Okay.
He does a Cripple Inside, John Lennon. You know, Ron covers the Beatles every once in a while. Jorge, Bobby Charles.
I like
just
that Jorge guy.
Yeah, Jorge's great.
He's cool, man.
Yeah.
He's a good player, too.
Jorge Castillo, the ace in the hole.
You guys play well off each other, I thought.
Thanks. We've been doing that. I've been playing with him a long time, even outside of the Drakes. Every once in a while, we used to play together.
Okay.
But, yeah, so like I said, it's anything. Cornbread does a song by a jug band, the Mississippi Sheiks. you know, but then it just gets Drakeified into whatever. So,
I liked it a lot. I'll go back and see you guys.
Oh, thank you.
Again and again.
Thanks.
I laughed, I cried. It was better than Cats. I'll see it again and again.
I was beklempt.
Where are you from, man?
I was born in Baltimore.
No way.
Yeah. And I grew up in Columbia, Maryland up until I think I was about 5. And that was a really neat place. I have memories of that and visiting after we moved to the next place. We'd go back and visit my cousins. And I really loved growing up in Columbia.
Wow. Where is Columbia in relativity to?
It's north of D.C., south of Baltimore. Is that right? Yeah.
It
would have to be north of D.C. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's in between. It's the C in D.C., District of Columbia.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, it was a weird... It was like a planned community where the guy... Columbia in general, as a city, was sort of like a planned city. And it was where I believe the structure was every school district was surrounded by sort of an equal number of high, low, and middle-income housing. So it was like instant diversity, which was like weird to grow up in a normal, like grow up in a cul-de-sac with people with different ethnic backgrounds.
And it was unlike just, growing up in D.C.
Oh,
like
really?
Inside in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty segregated.
Yeah, exactly.
There.
Yeah. And so anyway, it was a really neat place to live and it was a great neighborhood and it was a great place to play and have friends and stuff. And then we moved to California and just kind of crisscrossed the country a lot.
Where did you move in California? What was going on? What were your parents together?
They're still together. Yeah.
Wow.
My dad worked as an actuary for an insurance company, like a life insurance company. Oh. So he kind of, the essence of his job was, you know, predicting when somebody would die so that they can adjust their rates. Like you have to, isn't that messed up? Like an insurance company has to look at you, get a bunch of your information and go, okay, we think you're going to live till November of 2022, you know, and, you know, if you beat it, then, you know, we lose a little money. But anyway, it's terrible.
Wow.
But anyway, no, but he's like a numbers crunching guy. And then would move up to the next job opportunity. And a lot of times it would be just kind of across country. So we'd stay places typically like 3 or 4 years and then crisscross back.
Wow. So where in California were you?
We lived in Northridge.
Where's that?
That's, I think it's in the valley. It was the epicenter of the last huge quake.
Okay. You weren't there for it?
No. Okay. No. We moved there when I was, moved from there when I was like 10, 9 or 10. Then we moved to Connecticut and then moved to Waco. Then we moved back up to Connecticut. And then I graduated high school up in Connecticut, and I moved to Rhode Island for 2 years to go to photography school, and then I ended up moving down here just to play music.
When did you start playing music, though?
Well,
like
we had
high school.
I'd say middle school is when I probably when I would do formal stuff like piano lessons and trumpet.
Did you want to do that, or did they force that on you?
No, it was cool. It was just an option. No, my parents are cool. They don't really play music, but it was very important to my dad that we would be exposed to arts. He had a record collection. He loved listening to jazz and Latin jazz, and we'd have classical music and stuff. And he wanted to expose us to different things, and the things that stuck, the things that we liked, would be the things that they encouraged.
Cool.
It's weird.
Sounds like good parenting.
Yeah,
it's very odd.
Yeah, it's strange. I just thought that was isn't this how everyone does it?
Yeah.
But I liked music from the start. We always had a piano in the house, and so when I was a kid, I would just make up stuff like horrible, you know, things on the piano.
That's what I drew.
Yeah, that's what you do. I still do that.
Yeah.
So, but I always wanted a guitar, and then when I was 13, I got a guitar. They gave me a guitar for my birthday.
What was it?
It was a Yamaha Eterna, and it very difficult
Which
to
one
play.
Was that?
They were
was
just...
Was it acoustic?
It was acoustic,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an acoustic guitar. A friend of mine had an acoustic guitar at his house, and it had like 3 strings on it. And I went over his house and I was like, oh, cool, a guitar. And he's like, yeah. And I just like plucked the string like one time.
You were like, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I hounded my parents like all summer long. I was like, I got it. This, I have to get one of these.
You wanted an acoustic and not an electric?
Yeah, I wanted to. Well, I wanted to. It seemed like that's what you were supposed to do, is like learn to play acoustic
that's
and then move
told.
On to
that's
electric.
What my mom told me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I liked acoustic instruments. I didn't go straight for. But then within a year, I got an electric guitar, and it was right. Just like, you know, learning songs off Lynyrd Skynyrd records.
Yeah. What were you listening to? Like when you got like,
when I first got a guitar, we were living in Waco, and there was, I know, it's like, it was, man, so fortunate to be 13 in Waco and at least have a guitar.
Yeah.
You know, like, so, and it was also, for some reason, it was kind of hard for me to make friends that year. I'd never had problems like being the new guy at a school because I was used to doing it, but that Waco was kind of a hard nut to crack. It was hard to meet people.
Culturally, it's pretty different than the coasts.
Yeah. Jeez, man. It was such a culture shock. Like, I couldn't believe how different.
It's not different. About open-hearted acceptance in that town, probably, when you're a teenager. I mean, I remember moving from somewhere to Texas, and kids weren't nice.
Yeah, it was weird. You just, outsiders are not to be trusted, you know, is kind of the deal. But, like, you know, you move to Connecticut, and you're like, hey, who's the new kid?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they'll decide quickly if they want to kick your ass or accept you or whatever, you know. But anyway. But
I remember people saying I was a Yankee. And I was just, even then, I was like, what is fucking like 18 fucking 52 or some shit?
Yeah.
Like, fuck you. Like,
yeah.
There's like, all this is all just one country now. Yeah. It's all cool.
There was all this anger towards the North. And then, because I came in from Connecticut. Then there's all this kind of this instant anger toward the North. And I was like,
And you think you're smart, and you know you think you're all that.
It's just weird. It's just a weird place. I eventually made friends, and I have lifelong friends from then still.
Really?
One of my best friends lives in Austin. I've known him since then, and he came over to my house and knew how to play guitar because his dad was a guitar player. And he was like, "Oh, cool, you got a guitar," and he just starts playing the crap out of it. And I was just like, "Yeah, I want to, man. What is that? Show me that." So I instantly had somebody to show me. And not just have to try to go by ear, you know, and then I kind of got up to speed a little bit, and then we would just be able to play together. And holy crap, how much fun is that?
Oh, that's like amazing. When you involve other people, it's amazing.
Yeah,
it's like sex.
Yeah.
Like when you start by yourself, you're like, oh, this is amazing.
This is great.
And then when you involve someone else, it's like, yes!
Wow!
Yeah.
I never knew.
Yeah.
No, it was great. It's instantly getting to play songs with this guy, and then that makes you better.
What were you into though? Like, was there a special, like, a person that was your main person?
I liked I always liked the Beatles. I liked I liked Clapton, and I liked whatever I listened to on the radio. Right, that's what you want to imitate, like the things that you like to listen to.
And you're into classic rock.
Yeah, and it was classic rock for back then. Like everyone had a tape. If you were cool, if you had a tape player in your car, and everyone's tapes were Eagles' Greatest Hits.
Yeah, of course.
Aerosmith, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Golden Platinum, Back in Black. It was Van Halen 1, 2, maybe Women and Children First.
Yeah,
everyone had that kind of, and they still listen to it up North. They still those radios,
and in Waco.
And probably in Waco too. Yeah.
Camaros, the whole fucking shebang.
And I ended up liking, I think through that, Stevie Ray Vaughan, church. And then somehow I ran it. I found like JJ Cale, but my dad, among his jazz albums had one called, Blues Vocalist Volume 6. And it was just this compilation. And he would let me, even when I was a kid, like I knew how to change records out. Like that wasn't forbidden. I wasn't like forbidden to touch the stereo, so I can go and listen to stuff during the day. And all of that stuff. There was like Ray Charles and Jimmy Witherspoons and Lightning Hopkins, and I was just like, this stuff is from outer space, man. Like old like blues and rhythm and blues recordings. Like the first time you hear them. Yeah. You know, it's almost spooky. It almost like it sounds like it comes from another time and place is why, you know. And I really liked like that stuff. And my friends were, I think, listening to like Judas Priest and Iron Maiden and stuff like that.
You weren't in that zone.
I wasn't in that zone. So I was not familiar with any of that, even though it was kind of right in front of me. I felt like, that to me, that's emotionally, that sounds like rebellious music sounds really like coming from frustrated, you know, souls, you know, like you've got something to kind of rail against, or you've got that energy. And I just didn't ever have that energy. I didn't think that energy is bad energy.
That's interesting that you say, because I did. I mean, I feel like I had it when I found other ways to express it, but those metal ways were not my jam.
Yeah.
When they were happening.
Yeah. And they're bad. They're badass. Like,
they're badass.
We were talking earlier before, you know, about, you know, going down to the Ark and some of the bands that played at the Ark, and, man.
Pariah was phenomenal.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And
Godzilla Motor Company, remember them?
I know, Bobby Rock.
Yeah.
How badass is he? You see him do his,
He's in Down now.
Yeah. He's amazing. Jared Tootin, I talked about earlier, he produced this record that I was on with my buddy Charles. These are all like ARC, Austin Rehearsal Complex guys. And he's just recording us and being cool and everything, and I was trying to do a guitar part. It was just like Wayne's World when like Christopher Walken like picks up the guitar and just like rips on it.
Yeah.
Like I hadn't heard Jared play like that. Like he just picks up my guitar and he's like,
he's just
like ripping on the thing like just like a virtuoso. And I was just like, and he hands it back and he's like, anyway, well, or he says, this is what I was kind of hearing you playing. And then he like played it and I was like, oh, Jesus, oh my God. So, I mean, that's definitely, that's a talented world right there, that kind of music.
Oh,
you have
yeah.
to be really fucking good to do that stuff well. And,
So you were in Waco when that was going on, or you were back in Connecticut?
I was in Waco, I think, during when those bands were kind of full on. But I liked, like I said, I liked classic rock, and then there was like a Steve Miller album where he played a bunch of Jimmy Reed songs. It was, I think it was Living in the 20th Century. And then I was like, oh, who's this Jimmy Reed guy? And I'm starting to become more informed about blues stuff, because when I go and I look for the Lightning Hopkins record at the record store, well, then there's this whole area in the store devoted to like that kind of music. And so that's how I started really like getting into like blues and rhythm and blues. And I don't know why I found it so compelling, you know, because that's, you know, that wasn't also like not a life I was living. I wasn't living like an old blues guy is living. You know what I mean? But it was just like the rawness and the honesty of it was, I think it was probably the most compelling thing. And it was scary. It's weird. If you've just like never listened to a Howlin' Wolf song before, ever, like you just don't know who he is.
Yeah.
And you play that for somebody for the first time. I mean, it just, to me, it's just like, it's out of this world. It's just coming from another planet.
Yeah.
It's incredibly intense music. There's sometimes I couldn't listen to stuff all the way through. Like when I tried to first listen to Robert Johnson, I was probably like 15, and I'm listening to him, and it was so scary. I couldn't finish it. It was terrifying.
I don't know if I was ever exposed to it at that point, and I'm ashamed to say that I never really, like, listened to him until in like 1 week. This is sad to say, but I was already like in my early 30s, and in 1 week I read this interview where Jack Black talked about him, and then in the same week, whatever the Lomax guy that did the tapes for the.
Yeah, it was Alan and it was probably Alan.
The Sun.
Yeah.
Was on Fresh Air. And he was talking about it. And they played a little bit and I was like, fuck, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And then I got it. I mean, I went and got Everything You Can Get, which is whatever, two albums.
Yeah.
And
29 songs. Or something. Yeah.
And I mean.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. I'm sad that I missed that when I was younger. I was all wrapped up in like what kind of drum machine Howard Jones was using. I'm not joking.
You know, I was listening to something the other night. A friend of mine played Thompson Twins, Hold Me Now. And so much of that British that no, it's that if I just that would come on the radio in Waco, like you would hear Tears for Fears, and then Michael Jackson, and then Van Halen, and then Aerosmith, and then Janet Jackson, and then Cyndi Lauper. Like it was just all over the place. Right. So you'd have to, like, for me, I just wait like three songs and they'd play like some Zeppelin again or something. But like,
oh, right. So like in the like early 80s.
Yeah. So you, yeah. And you, so you, you're being exposed, whether you like it or not, you're kind of exposed to like this other music. And so it was popular music. And, you know, and we were all like, oh, that's just crap, man. That's such crap. That's a drum machine and blah, blah, blah. And all it. And I just didn't listen to that stuff. I didn't like it. It wasn't cool to like it, you know? And then I hear it now. It's so much better than what's on the radio right now in a way. Like, you know, like that old, like it, those songs are really, that Thompson Twins song was a great song.
Yeah.
And it was, and so much of that is sort of based on like the rhythm and blues, you know, like hold me now, my baby. That's like an old, that might as well be a Motown song.
That was a big thing to do though in those couple years, like to have the high singing thing at the end, like and Shout, you know, and songs like that.
Oh, that's right, Shout, yeah. But you know what, now I listen to it, I'm like, yeah, this is good. You can't it deny it. Like, you know, Duran Duran went into the studio as a band.
Oh, Duran Duran to me is like a real, like that's, there's no nostalgia with that. To me, that was like a real creative force of that era. That's a cool band.
Or like when the Cars come on and I listen to like a Cars song, I'm like, that's just brilliant. That's just genius. It's so, so well done.
Talk about a fucking phenomenal guitar player too, Elliot Easton.
Yes. And those are like the guys I like Mike Campbell from Tom Petty.
Yeah, that's
and Elliot Easton, you know, and just the kind of the background guys you don't hear about, you know, but oh my god, what was the one kind of the Cars song? Oh,
it's a lot of songs.
Oh, I know. Oh, it's killing me. Anyway, he just rips off this country guitar solo.
Oh, My Best Friend's Girl?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is that song is absolute from front to end. Perfect. That song is perfect. And then they got like the Augie Myers keyboards coming in. That's the thing I was just doing. And it comes in at just the right spot, and then he rips off this country guitar chicken picking solo in the middle of a pop song, and it's like completely the exact right thing to play. That song
is stuff in there. Yeah. You know, he played with a few years ago, he was playing with the oldest living bluegrass players. He was in their band.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. I heard that on NPR.
Wow. I have not kept up with him.
Elliot Easton, man. That band is huge for me. I can't even begin to tell you.
Yeah.
So, okay, so...
Yeah, it was kind of across the board. I mean, we were talking about, like, what I was listening to, like, when I was starting to play. I was like, I liked a lot of... Sorry, that was, like, in half an
we
hour
just
ago.
Just went into the Thompson Twins.
But, like, that's...
Hold
that's
me
a,
now.
wow. It was the extended version. It was, like, the 9 minutes side I listened to. Anyway, go ahead.
Remember they did, for some reason now, they did like Revolution, remember that? They did like a version of Revolution by the Beatles.
I don't remember.
It wasn't very good.
Yeah.
When you went back up to Connecticut, you started a band?
No, not
yet. Did you have bands in
yet.
High school?
Not yet. No, I didn't really. I just, there wasn't a lot of that. And where I went to high school in Connecticut, there was one other guy that played guitar, and then... We found I kind of was in a band, and it was like a really terrible like school band, but they're all really great guys and they're all really great musicians. But we had a bass player, a keyboard player, and then two guitars. We didn't even have a drummer.
Oh.
And we would, I think we wrote two instrumentals and then played them in front of the school. Like that was it. Like I didn't start getting into bands until I went off to a photography school. And that was a weird thing too. Like
Why did you choose photography and not music?
I thought that I'd been into photography since I was about 10, and which is that's like a totally other story. But my aunt left me a camera, an old a Pentax camera. And then we used to go to these places called libraries. It's weird. You know, the building full of books and shit.
Yeah. No, I remember
that. That was another thing. My parents were like, pretty much, I think every weekend we went to the library. As a family, we went to the library.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and my sister is, she's a strong reader. She can read.
That's good.
I'd get books about dinosaurs and shit. She'd get like Kurt Vonnegut books. She's only 2 years older than me, and she's like reading Kurt Vonnegut, and I'm like, ooh, dinosaurs. but I also went to the, I got books on photography, and I taught myself, and I'd get a roll of film, and I learned how to do all that.
We'd take
the film to Eckerd.
Yeah.
And, anyway, but that whole time I was playing guitar, and then I was 17 when I graduated high school by about a month and a half. So I was like really young to be going like anywhere. And I knew college wasn't going to do it for me. Like I just knew. Yeah. Like my older sister, the book reader, like full scholarship, just, you know.
Right,
like,
right.
Grad school. Like she, you know, super smart. Very good with school. I was just very good with like not that, you know, like I liked playing guitar and taking pictures, and it didn't seem like wasting a whole bunch of money to go somewhere to kind of what felt like it was killing time. Like I already knew what I wanted to do. Those were the two things I wanted to do, and I thought that I was going to be a photographer and then play a bunch of music like for fun. And then after a couple of years of
like
photography,
Danny Clinch.
Who?
Danny Clinch,
uh-uh.
You know him?
Uh-uh.
He's a great photographer.
Oh, wow.
And he's a jammer.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I thought I was going to do. And then after a couple of years of photography school, I realized I really didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be a wedding photographer or a portrait photographer or a commercial photographer. I wanted to work for National Geographic, you know, and then, you know, I just wanted them to hire
me
to go places.
Weird titties with
rings. Yeah. I want to see them up close and personal. No, but like, you know, I didn't know, like, you know, you make that job, you make it happen. You become a journalist, or you go and you do a piece somewhere and send it in. Like there's no, you don't go knock on National Geographic's door and just be like, I'd like a job.
Yeah.
But anyway, I knew for sure I wanted to play music by then. So, and I was probably like 18 when I was like, this switch.
What was your rig?
I had a Yamaha SE700E with a Floyd Rose, and that Yamaha acoustic, and a crate amplifier, a solid state crate that was in the crate. Remember, like they made them to where it looked like it was in a crate.
Yeah.
So I had one of those, and that was terrible.
At some point, I had a crate too. I don't know why.
Yeah, Crate.
And then Crate.
When I moved to Rhode Island, I was delivering pizza and going to school, and I had enough money saved up to get a Fender Strat Plus, a 1989 Fender Strat Plus.
Is that one that just had the pickup down here?
No, it had the three pickups, but they were lace sensors. They were like the Jeff Beck model, right? You know?
And
I got it for cheaper because it hadn't sold, and it was up on the wall for like a year, and they just couldn't sell it, and it was because it was the graffiti yellow. So it's this bright neon yellow with a white pickguard, and I was like, well, got me a Strat.
Yeah.
You know, and then I went and I bought and I still have both of these, and I got a 1977 Fender Twin. For real cheap. Like back then they were just like, I think somebody had it in the classified section for like $100 or something. And I went and I bought that, and I still have that twin. But so that was my rig, and I would three flights of stairs with the twin, like, and they were like the spiral back stairs of these.
That's a heavy ass amp.
Yeah, yeah.
So but, were you playing in a band then?
Yeah, at that point I was every Monday night they had it was a place called the American Cafe, and they had an open mic, and it was like they had full rigs, like drums, everything all set up. And so I would do this with this guy named Derek and this drummer, and we didn't have a bass player, so we would just every week we'd have somebody that played bass just join us, whoever was there, and we played there every Monday. We even rehearsed as a three piece, and then we'd go and show up, and then we never had our own bass player, but we did that for about a year.
One of you guys didn't have the fucking wherewithal to go and play bass. That's usually how people become bass players. It's like how everybody played guitar. Like, no, dude, you're going to play bass. I'm going to play guitar.
Well, the guy that was singing was playing acoustic guitar. And so that would have been a drums
and
acoustic.
And so you at that point were lead guitarist.
Yeah. He wanted me to play bullets. He'd say, play bullets.
What does that mean?
Like call and response. So he'd want like a stinger in between.
Like, you know.
He loved that. He didn't care if I played any chord. So he was older than me, and I was super clean shaven, couldn't grow. I mean, I looked like I was 13 when I was like 18 or 19. And he's like this hippie guy with this huge beard and long hair, the Jesus looking guy. He was real thin. And we played, he moved. I moved down to Austin. Having each other's phone numbers, you know, like just that guy's gone. That's the end of that. And 7 years later, I'm playing with this band in Austin, and I've got long hair, you know. And this guy kept coming up every couple of months, and he's like, "Man, we really like your band, you know." My name's Derek. No, my name's Dee Dee. He'd go by Dee Dee. I'm like, "Oh, hey, how you doing?" And I'm like, "Where are you from?" He's like, "Oh, Providence, Rhode Island." We ran into each other like 10 times over the course of like 2 years. Wow. And we didn't recognize each other, and we couldn't put it together. Like, we just couldn't put it together for some reason. And then, one day, David Lee Roth is playing at Stubbs. I don't know if you were at that show, but he had the best Van Halen cover band ever backing him up. And he had a Texas tour, and he had to cancel it because there was like a bomb threat in Lubbock, and then he just canceled the whole tour. So he only played two of the shows on like this 7-city Texas tour. And one of them he played was, and he was just like, he also like a, kind of like a cartoon character for something, like, you know, it's a little bit of a gut. Yeah. He couldn't jump as high as he used to.
Yeah.
Maybe couldn't hit the high notes, but it was fucking David Lee Roth, man. And it was the fucking backup band. You might as well have been listening to Van Halen, right? So. Anyway, so I'm at the show, and then Derek is there, and Derek he's had a few to drink. It's still daytime. And I'm like, "I know you. We used to play together at the American Cafe." And he just went, "Shut up." And I'm like, "No, Greg was our drummer." And he's like, "No." And I'm like, "Yeah, we used to play Werewolves in London." I just started going down the set list. He's like, "No." And he just starts freaking out. He's like, "No, no." And then David Lee Roth kicks into the first song. It's like Panama. He's like, "Hold on, I'll be right back." And he fucking runs off. And then you hear Dave yell at somebody in the crowd. He's like yelling, "Get that motherfucker out of here." And the next thing you know, like six huge security guards have the skinny guy, Derek, and they parade him past me because they're kicking him out. And as he's traveling by me, he just goes, "I threw my margarita at David Lee Roth." So that's what he did. He goes, "Hold on, I'll be right back." And he just ran to the front of the stage and threw a margarita.
Why would you do that to him?
He was just drunk. He didn't know. And then I didn't see him for like six more months because we just never got each other's
phone. That guy sounds like trouble.
Oh, he's great. Oh, he's a fantastic guy. Okay. He's a wonderful guy. Yeah. And then,
so what are you, some crazy fucking David Lee Roth fan? Or Van Halen fan?
Yeah, dude. Van Halen 1, Van Halen 2, Women and Children First. Yeah. That was a great rock band.
Yeah.
Amazing. They were those guys in AC/DC. Okay, you got that. And then after that in rock, and this is my warped view, you have nothing. You've got hair metal. You've got just, you know, all the worst part of metal. And then Guns N' Roses comes out, and it's like, "Oh, cool, it's back."
Right,
like,
right,
you know
right.
what I mean? So between
that's cool,
the man. Album before 1984, the second to last,
Diver Down.
Okay, yeah. So between Diver Down and Appetite for Destruction, that however many years.
So you don't subscribe to the Metallica world of metal?
No, I just didn't like it. I liked...
It's not as songy.
Yeah, it seems to me, it's so rigid, it's so square, everything is in very square compartmentalized
things. It's pretty
intense,
It's so fast.
Yeah, it's not meant for me. I think it's, like I said, you know, it takes incredible skill to play that kind of thing.
Sure, but
like,
man, just it's down, hard stuff, man.
Down deep.
I can't even think I can't even think like that. I was listening to it this morning when before I did Jason McMaster. I was listening to his band. I forgot their call.
The Dangerous Toys.
No. I mean, the guy's in fucking 18 bands.
Yeah.
They're called. The cool thing is too. Their logos. It's called Evil United. Awesome. Their logo's the same upside down. Says Evil United, and you turn it upside down. Says Evil United. Same thing. Pretty cool when they do that.
That's great.
Anyway, it was like that, and I was like, man, I don't even like. I mean, I don't even know how people think that fast. Like, same thing with like really fast rap. I'm not saying I don't like it. I really like that stuff, but it's really like I'm not a musician when I listen to that stuff.
Yeah. There's when you talk about like notes flying by, like bebop is sort of like that
bebop,
too.
Bebop, yeah.
Like, I get the theory behind it. I understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
I can't do it, but I understand why they're doing it and what they're doing. But like it goes by so fast, and it just becomes like, to me, it just becomes math more, you know. But for me, not for what they're doing. They're not they're not doing math for music. But like, to me, it just, that's kind of the only way I can relate to it, is all these like divided spaces in between the notes, and it just seems like metal is very, like very square wave like that. And I just like things that flow more. I like soft edges, you know, in listening to music. So not like Chuck Mangione, who's great.
That guy's something else, man. When you played trumpet, so did you know that song?
I did. And the cool, I did. I used, because he was also the official musician of the Lake Placid Olympics. And so he had, and that's right when he was like at the peak of his popularity. So he, you know, Good Morning America would come on and there would be Chuck Mangione and he'd be playing Feels
So Good.
That
was a great Olympics.
Yeah, I know. We really
That was
really
an exciting
well.
Olympics.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you moved to Austin, what year did you move to Austin? What was the climate and what was the deal? Why did you... What brought you to Austin?
My sister, who was 2 years
trying
older.
Trying to get back to Waco.
Yeah, I know. Just really, if I can just get back to Waco where I belong. No, she graduated high school and went to UT when the rest of us moved back up to Connecticut because she was 2 years ahead of us. So she started college. And so she went to UT. And in 4 years, I was done with being in Rhode Island. And I didn't really want to move to where my parents lived, which was Albany, New York. I was lamenting this to her. I was like, I'm not quite sure. I think I would like to like maybe Memphis or New Orleans. And she was like, you should try
looking for a blues town, place that plays organic music, like a real kind of like, you're not thinking like, I'm going to move to New York and LA and make it. You're like, I'm going to go dig into my fucking
I just
craft
go,
and I'm going to go play with the people that are the best at this organic kind of music.
Yeah, just like, you have to go there to learn about it.
Yes.
You know?
You go find your sensei.
Yeah.
And you go to school.
Yeah, and it was a perfect time. I was 19. And, you know, I already lived on my own for a couple of years. That was the other thing, because when I was 17, this school didn't have like dormitory housing. You actually just had to get, they had a little system where you can hook up with other students and try to find apartments together, you know, or whatnot. And
like Tinder.
Yeah, exactly. And so we found a place like two blocks from the school that was like the basement of this old lady, Filomena Antuano from Sicily. This is in Providence, Rhode Island. It was a heavily Italian population. And the road stripe in front of my house was painted red, white, and green, the Italian.
Oh, yeah?
Like, it's awesome. It's super Italian. It's Filomena Antuano. And she was like in her late 80s, and she was my landlord. And it was super cheap to live, so it was better than a dorm. And so, like, at 17, I live alone in this small little house, you know? Like, that's pretty... Like, that's really great.
Yeah.
So I'd already done that a couple of years anyway by the time I moved down here. So getting a place down here wasn't like scary or anything to move across country.
You know, they played my band at WBRU a lot.
Really?
I went there on a radio tour before our album came out, and I guess I was friends with the guy. Maybe it was a student guy that was running it, somehow liked our band, and then we ended up hanging out with him. Mm-hmm. And I really liked Providence until I was on tour there in like fucking February.
Oh, God.
And then I thought, listen to this. This is honest to God truth. I'm Cuban. I live here in Texas. If it's freezing outside, normally your gig gets canceled.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's
yeah.
just
yeah, that's there, how life just like, works. Yeah, it's Tuesday.
Dude, it was like fucking 9 degrees. And I'm sitting in my room and our tour manager's like, hey, are you ready to go? And I'm like, are you sure? You better call and make sure it's not canceled. He's like, dude, in the world, they don't do this. Like, this isn't Texas.
Yeah.
And like, I went and the whole ride down there was like 10 minutes from our hotel. I was like, no one's going to be there. We're going to go there. It's going to be fucking freezing. That place was packed and people were going there like it was normal.
Yeah.
Like, and that's how they live.
You can keep warm if everyone gets, you know, crams into the same building.
That is WBRU, right? The Brown University
I think so,
station?
Yeah.
That's a good place, man. That's a good station. Not just because they played us, they had a cool station.
That's how you would listen to me. That's how you would find jazz or blues or rhythm and blues on the radio is go to the college stations, go to the left side of the dial.
That's the only places that play. Yeah.
And so there was a guy that did a 4-hour blues show every month. I still have tapes of him. And it was just like a little, like, you know, little college guy, you know, just kind of envision the kind of nerdy DJ college kid, you know, AV club guy, you know, and he was just playing great blues and I would just tape him. And then, I'd go back and listen to the tapes and I'd play along. I'd practice along to him, you know, and that's how I got more and more familiar with that. And I bought a lot of vinyl records back then. So I got really into that. And then when I moved to Austin, I went to like Antone's Records and I was just like, well, they had Music Mania. Had a lot. It was only vinyl back then. Antone's Records and Inner Sanctum Records. Those were the three places I went.
Those were great places.
Yeah,
I loved Inner Sanctum. I also lament all of the Les Amis gone.
Yeah,
you lived here then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it
was. And who were you playing with? Were you playing with people then?
I was playing.
Did we ever meet?
No, I don't think.
Did we literally just met the other night?
I think so.
Through Jason.
Yeah,
just that's so weird.
Two worlds colliding.
I know.
Yeah.
So what do we run in different circles then?
Yeah, and I
where were you playing in the early 90s?
I would play...
Like, who were you playing with?
I'd play at Babes on 6th Street.
Okay.
Headliners East. I had a band in the...
Where was Headliners East?
It was next to Toulouse, which is across the Caddy Quarter
across
from
the street
at Maggie Mae's.
At Steamboat. I was in Mr. Rocket Baby.
Yeah. I have seen you back then, because I used to go to Steamboat a lot back then. Steamboat was... That was the best kind of rock place. It was that and the Black Cat. You'd go to Steamboat and the Black Cat. There was the Cannibal Club, which turned into the Jelly Room. There was Chances on Red River. The Cavity Club.
I got to give it up. I don't ever talk about it on here because Mr. Rocket Baby and that whole thing was such a Steamboat phenomenon. But before that, I had a band that couldn't play anywhere but Chances.
Yep.
And that was the fucking place, man. That
place is great. She was fantastic.
She gave us, what was her name?
I can't.
The
I
dark
even...
hair. It's a... It was so nice.
Caffeine used to play there all the time.
It was a lesbian bar.
Yeah.
And they let rock people play there. Uh-huh. And just like whatever you want, man. Mm-hmm. Put together shows.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like Wednesdays and you know, you'd make like $40. But it was really fucking awesome.
Which is like $300 today.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's Chicago House for songwriters.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was Chances. And then the Electric Lounge opened up. And then there was another place. Where
did you go there?
I used to go there a lot.
Did you play there?
Yeah. I played with Beaver Nelson back then. And we'd play the
Then I've seen you play then.
Well, all the way back then? Like at Hole in the Wall shows and stuff?
I moved here in 1991 and saw Beaver the whole time. I maybe haven't seen Beaver since 1996 or something.
We used to play with the Loose Diamonds at Home and Wall and stuff. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. And that was just... And he was great because really up until then, I just played with blues types of stuff and rhythm and blues stuff. And, you know, we had, like, the blues band names, like 9 Below Zero. And we were in a band called the Mood Rings. That was a good... that was such a great...
That was a terrible name,
absolutely. No, but anyway, and then...
And those were, like, three-set gigs, man. Right?
Yeah, a lot of
those gigs. That Babes shit, man, they weren't fucking around.
Yeah.
You're talking about Babes like restaurant side or the club side?
Oh, no, the club side. Yeah, the club side. But you do the restaurant side, then you really would have to play 3 hours. Stephen Dossiter used to play.
I used to play with Stephen Dossiter on the restaurant side on like Wednesdays for like 6 months.
Wow.
Me and the other guy from Mr. Rocker,
baby. I bet I
saw
you then.
Sure.
Because it was him and I think it was Tommy Eskis.
Those guys, we came in when somebody took a break, but we were there maybe not 6 months, but 3 or 4 months.
And Gary Clark was at Jazz on 6th Street, like playing as a 15-year-old kid. Yeah. That's all around that same time. But yeah, yeah, that's funny. So yeah, oh, Todd Oakley, that was the sound man at Babes, and I lived with that guy for 3 years, and I have no idea where he is. That was like 15 years ago.
Do you remember when Velvet Hammer used to do their night there?
Yes,
the girls, heavy metal girls with flute. Yeah. I played with them one night on mushrooms there.
Oh,
with
wow.
My friend Einar.
That's great.
Yeah, it was.
You know, I
yeah, it's like, that's great. Congratulations.
I'm so happy. That's for great. You. Yeah. Fantastic. No, that reminds me though, because of that, because that's when Sixth Street had bands all over.
They still have it.
Yeah, I'd really.
God, oh, I dude, it's terrible then.
Okay, thank
you. And it's guys up there. I mean, it's really like degenerated to. God damn it! I don't mean any offense to anyone, because everyone's out there making a living, and through this show, I've taught myself not to judge people, because it's not fair, because everybody has to make a living. And honestly, I have to sing Faith by George Michael in a band. So yeah.
You can say it.
Nobody's. Yeah. Nobody. You got to serve somebody.
Yeah.
And something's happening somewhere.
Yeah.
But what's happening down there is a lot of the open door places with a barker. I'll say, hey, man, live music, you know, because that's live music capital.
Where the capital
landed at the airport. Yeah. Hey, let's go to Sixth Street and party. That's a thing I saw on a thing on the Travel Channel.
Yeah.
And they have bands in every places. And so it's literally like the most generic, crappy versions of blues that you can imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe they're in there. There's a future Gary Clark Jr. or something. But normally it's not. It's like... Not great.
Yeah, that's kind of what started weaning me off of it a little bit. Because there's like the Antone's House Band, phenomenal. Like,
yeah, you know, like, see, that's you know the thing, I mean? Is that...
When you have that, and you know what that sounds like, and what it's supposed to sound like...
Those
and
are then, the guys I know, yeah.
Yeah, and then you go and you hear it on sort of like a... like you said, I don't want to, you know, but it...
Not at all, but you go to Denny Freeman... It's a completely different story than this dude playing with the thing.
Yeah, but you know, it's in
some
ways
lazy. They're playing lazy, and they're you know,
in some ways, when I was younger and I was going to like blues open mic jams like that, like I didn't know what was not appropriate to play or whatnot. It just took through doing it like through a really long time, and I still listen to blues, but I don't really play in blues bands anymore. But you know. I worked at this amp repair shop, and a couple of years ago, this guy came in, and he was like, yeah, I just moved here. Man, I thought this was a blues town, but man, there ain't nothing going on here. And then he just starts kind of like ragging on specific people, like, you know, so-and-so, she's just phoning it in and all this stuff. And I was like, who are you? Like, who are you coming into my town and telling, like that these people, you know? And I was just like, and tell me, how do you know so much about the blues, young man? Like, you know, like, just don't pretend that you know something, you know, just because you're such a huge fan, like that, like you really know how Howlin' Wolf felt or something. Like, you know what it is that makes a person a blues man.
Yeah.
But this other guy who's been doing it for 40 years is just phoning it in now.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? So I started getting like kind of a little bit testy, and then and he asked me something about blues or if I played in a blues band, and I was like, "Well, I used to." And then after the thousands,
I was in Mood Ring.
Yeah, I was in the Mood Rings. Perhaps you've heard of us. No, but I was like, you know, after like the thousandth time, you have to go dunk a gunk a da da, and I started just singing them all the cliche blues lines that you kind of have to do at these places. You know, I was just cutting them down a little bit, like he was getting a little. Coming in being all cocky about shit that he didn't know about. Anyway, you know, and I was just like, I can't imagine having to do that all night long, you know? Like, and it's just, and I'm, so now.
It's like the most unprofessional podcast. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's all right.
Just let Ryan Ferry finish his intro.
Yeah.
One more time.
Oh, that was great. I love the drums.
And then it's almost over. All right.
That's great.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Roxy Music. Yeah. Do you ever listen to that? growing up?
No,
I missed 70s Roxy music.
I missed it. I missed
Brian Eno was in the band.
Yeah. I missed out on some of that. Some of that stuff I listened. My oldest sister, when we moved from California, I was 9 or 10, and she stayed behind to go to college, and she stayed in California. It's my older sister Nina. So she was like in her 20s when that kind of new wave thing was coming out, right? Like all the, that was super, and anything that happened in California didn't get to Waco until like 2 years, literally like 2 years later. Yeah. But she would send me these mixtapes of like Oingo Boingo.
Oh, yeah.
And God, just all of these, all of that kind of new wave music. And I was very familiar, of all things, very familiar with Oingo Boingo's music. Like I listened to so much of that in the Devo and the B-52s. Those are things that my sisters listened to that I listened to and that on Talking Heads and stuff like that. So I was kind of, it was a little bit.
She was in art rock.
Yeah.
Into art rock. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what Roxy music was.
Okay. Yeah. But I didn't explore that much further outside of those bands. You know, there's all this other music. I like listening to lots of different types of music. And I was like, it sounded like I was kind of slagging on like blues stuff before. Cause like,
No, not at all. And I don't want to slag on people out there making a living. We all have to do it, but there is there, what they're doing is not what they're selling.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
I love
that I listen to that stuff so much, and I love that that is informed my guitar playing to a degree. And also by living in Austin, you end up playing with singer-songwriters, which inevitably means that you'll end up playing stuff that's a little bit more country. And I never listened to country until I started being in bands that, or, you know, filling in for people
with
that
Bieber.
Need it.
That was a country?
No, Beaver was rock and roll. Beaver was like garage band rock and roll. That's like his, like, it's like Beaver Nelson, the lost years, like 94 through like 96.
Right.
And that's what I was saying before. Now, there's a great songwriter. There is a guy, even at a young age, who was being compared to some really heavy people. And his songwriting is just, and it still is, obviously. It's like, you know, it's just better by 20 years. You know, back to, he wrote really amazing songs. And that was the first band I was in where I played with a songwriter. And I got really lucky that I got with a good one, you know, like one of the greatest. And anyway, he's the greatest of all times. but anyway... That was a little bit more rock, and that was listen to more Stones, listen to more Bruce Springsteen. He turned me on to Townes Van Zandt, and even Bob Dylan to like into a more in depth. You know, he drive. We listened to what he played, and that was about it. Those were the four things that we listened to the most. You know, was Stones, Bruce Springsteen, Dylan, and Townes. And so there, I'm informed about Townes Van Zandt and that style of songwriting. And as a songwriter back then, I was like, can't do that. Like, I just can't do that. That's not even like that. I'm not even going to try.
Right.
You know. So I didn't start writing songs until later. Until I realized I didn't have to try to write like that. You know? And then, like, I like J.J. Cale a lot. I like his guitar playing a lot. I like his singing, and I like his songs a lot. And a lot of times those are really simple songs. And it's like...
Lay Down Sally? Did you write that?
No, Clapton wrote that in sort of homage to J.J. Cale. And then he's also using a lot of Cale's players because Cale's got the Oklahoma guys, the Shelter
Tulsa
record. Yeah. So he's got...
Wait, name one of the J.J.
Jim Gordon would be the drummer.
Right,
on a lot
no,
of that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, but name a J.J. Cale song.
One that's like that. No, it would be like Call Me the Breeze is sort of like Lay Down Sally. Or he did Cocaine, After Midnight. And so, yeah, Clapton would get these massive hits with him, or Leonard Skinner would have the hits. And then, so he'd get, you know, he was smart about his publishing. So he, you know, he did pretty well as just getting mailbox money, which allowed him to continue to do whatever he wanted.
Right.
There's a story about him. They had a hit in the late 60s, and they're going to go on American Bandstand or some show. Like, I think it was American Bandstand, and they said, well, you have to lip sync. And then they said, well, we've got all our stuff. We've got our, you know, we just want to play. And they're like, no, you have to on the show. We don't, that's the rule. And they just got in their station wagon and then drove off. It just didn't do, they didn't do American Bandstand that day. They just decided not to do it. Like, cause anyway, so yeah, that's a guy that I like a lot because it felt like it, and he also encompasses stuff like country music and blues and funk and soul and everything, like, and that's what you were talking about before, like,
the South.
What's that?
It's like the South.
Yeah, it's the South. It's American Southern music, and it's all of them. It's all of these different things, like from Cajun music, even to Cajunto music. There's so much history there. I can't understand how somebody only listens to one kind of music, like that's it. Like, oh, I just listen to red dirt music. That's it. Like, yeah. Or whatever it is. Like, I only listen to blues. I only listen to clown. I can't even imagine how monotonous that would be,
yeah,
to listen to the same kind of music. So I like all of those kinds of things. And then, you know, if you play those styles of music over the course of years, then it all just kind of blends together. And that's what I like. And that's kind of what I liked about J.J. Cale or Ry Cooder or people like that. Ry Cooder's another guitar player who I like a lot, you know. But he's a background guy. And I like the background guys. I like Steve Cropper. I like Ron Wood.
Yeah.
You know, I like the Elliot Easton, Mike Campbell. Yeah. They're not the center of what's going on.
Right.
They're helping, you know, get
they're the guitarist with Mystique.
Yeah. They're helping the engine run.
Yeah.
You know, they're part of the rhythm.
You're
section.
A band guy.
Yeah. Like that's,
yeah,
that's what I really like doing. And that's the other really great thing about the Drakes is, you get to do all of those styles of music and throw in pub rock, throw in the Faces. I like bands like Los Lobos. I like people like Doug Somm that play all sorts of different kinds of music and then
blend
them together.
I love Doug Somm.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I loved Doug Somm as a guy.
Yeah.
He was a good guy.
Yeah.
I was in a band with Shandon for a while, and one of the coolest things about it, outside of getting to hang out with Shandon a lot, was he was around. He'd always come to the gigs and hang out. And, hey, man.
Yeah.
Hey, man. Are you like the Beach Boys? Tell you a fucking, man, I did a bunch of shit with Carl Wilson. Sit down and fucking like listen to fucking hour story about it.
Yeah.
What a great guy.
Yeah. I only got that about once or twice, because I didn't get to hang out at all with Doug Somm. But I was such a huge fan. My wife at the time, she was like, well, if you like this stuff, you should listen to Doug Somm.
Yeah.
And so she gave me a Doug Somm CD to listen. We were just dating at the time. And I listened to it, and I was like, yeah, it's pretty cool. And I brought it back to her, and I was like, yeah, it was pretty good. You know, and she goes, listen to it again, yeah. You know. And I listened to it again, and then it was like the light bulb went off, and I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I have so much of his music. Like I was telling you earlier before the interview, I was in a Doug Somm cover band. We have
awesome,
45 Sir Douglas Quintet songs or something like that. Jesus. Yeah. But then that became a thing where, like, if that's okay, if that's the only thing you're going to do, then after a while, like, I think we need to give it, like, 2 or 3 years, you know, and then get back into it. But anyway, so, yeah, that's the kind of stuff that I like now. And, like, bands like Los Lobos or Doug Somm or you know, that do a little bit of everything,
yeah.
You know.
I have a funny, I think I told Shandon this once, but... I was in a band that got signed by Lars Ulrich from Metallica. We weren't a metal band, but he just liked our band, and so he signed us. And when he was going to sign us, I was playing with Shandon at the same time, too, in this other band, like just kind of playing guitar. And Doug was like, I was telling Doug about it, and he's like, oh, you know, I know those guys. I'm friends with their managers, but I know those guys. I've hung out with Lars, like, a lot and all this shit. Oh, and it's like, tell him I said hi, and I was like, okay. So then, like, the next time I saw Lars, I was like, oh, hey, Doug Somm told me to tell you that. He's like, fuck, that dude's fucking crazy. I was like, wow, for a dude that, like, toured with Ozzy and is in Metallica, like, that dude is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was fucking awesome, man. What a force.
Yeah, and he did everything. Like, he did all sorts of kinds of music, and then he did it all again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he started off, like, the San Antonio rhythm and blues cuts. And then, you know, then he gets the last real Texas blues band, and he's using some of those same guys, you know, at that point, you know, the horn sections and stuff and the rhythm sections. He had such great bands. You know, he had George Raines on drums, Jack Barber on bass, Speedy Sparks on bass, John X Reed on guitar,
yeah,
Augie, Flacco.
Yeah.
Just insanely talented musicians always played with him. It was always such a... I loved watching that guy play. He was a great showman, too. He was a great front man. That's just something that... Yeah,
he had fucking Chris. It's like Rusty Weir. Did you ever see him?
Oh, yeah,
that guy was
yeah.
fucking...
Yeah.
That guy had fucking magic, man.
Yeah.
That guy was amazing.
Yeah. Joe Ely has that, too. Like, Joe Ely, if he's just on stage with an acoustic guitar and he just, like, he puts, like, puts his right foot forward, like, 2 inches or something that, it's just like Doyle Brommel Jr.'s like that. There's a guy who can just stand still. Just stand still in front of the mic, and then and just like the whole place is just like you're in, you know, like it's weird, like
yeah,
you know, he's not, I don't have to jump around stage or anything, but yeah, Doug had a great stage presence, and yeah, he's that sucks that he's gone.
It's just yeah, like, totally.
Yeah, he died way too early.
Who are you playing with now?
Right now, I'm playing with well, the Drakes every Tuesday at 1 to 1. I do fill-in stuff for sometimes with Beth Lee and Penny Joe Pulis. Tanya Winch is another singer I play with. Tonight, I'm playing with Amanda. Well, by the time you listen to this, but I'm playing with Amanda Piercy tonight at Strange Brew, one of my favorite places to play.
I like that place.
So it seems like... and there's another band I'm in called The Stir, and that's sort of like the Drakes. It's just different type of music, and there's multiple singers in that band, too.
What's the type of music?
It's just a little bit funkier, a little less rock, and I'm trying not to have songs that are played in both bands. Like, we want to get the set list
keep
up.
Keep it mutually exclusive.
Yeah, I think that would be, you know, sometimes, like, we have a 3-hour gig coming up, so we're going to have to do stuff that...
Cause, that you do in the
Yeah, Jorge's in that band also.
Oh.
So we're both in both bands. And then the drummer is Eldridge Goines, who also sits in with the Drakes.
Love Eldridge Goines.
Yeah, Eldridge's fantastic.
He's a good dude, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a Stir's like, it's like the Drakes. It's just like a parallel universe. Like Naj Conklin on bass, who's a fantastic bass player, and Eldridge, and then Jorge. So it's like already, it's just a good band when they just show up. You know, and then so and we've been working on stuff, and that's a lot. That's another band that's just a lot of fun, and it's a band of sidemen, so we have to just we don't play very often, but you know, when we do, it's magic.
It's magic. How can people find the Drakes or find you? Say people want to find out what you're doing music wise.
The Drakes have a website called thedrakesband.com.
Okay.
www. And then my website is www.mattguitargiles.com. Because you would not believe how many Matt Gileses there are in the music business. Yeah. There's 7 or 8.
Is it with the G?
Yeah, G-I-L-E-S.
So why isn't it Giles, like J. Giles?
Well,
Matt Giles.
It's G like giraffe.
Oh, I think it's spelled different.
Well, it's a soft G. I think, you know, it's a soft, it's my middle name.
That's what the girls call me, soft G.
Sweet Maddie, soft G. Giles.
Is there anything that I'm missing? Is there anything you got to tell me about something?
Well, the Drakes got a new record coming out in about 2 or 3 weeks.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, we're. I've. They're in my living room right now. I should have brought you one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, this is a media outlet.
I know.
This is a major media outlet.
Yeah, that's crazy
to
yeah.
me.
Yeah, I know. To you, this is. There's this room is full of recording equipment and glowing flashing lights and stuff.
When my grandpa passed away, and he was fascinated with. It was real weird. I didn't realize how into men... Well, I guess I always knew. He liked dudes with guns, holding guns.
Yeah.
And prepared to shoot a gun.
Wow.
He had a lot of guns. He's very into John Wayne, very into Clint Eastwood, very into Charles Bronson. These were his guys.
Yeah, those were...
Reagan.
Yeah.
Huge Reagan.
Yeah.
All around. Actor, president, governor.
Yeah.
Conservative thinker.
Yeah.
Anti-communist.
Anti-communist. And those are all guys, yeah, Reagan's an actor, yeah, Western actor. Those guys come from a place that guys don't come from anymore.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, there's
Don
no,
Draper.
Yeah, Don, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Mad Men. There's no Robert Mitchum. in the world right now. That there's no like 45-year-old guy that's... There's probably a couple out there that I don't know about because I don't keep up with the Hollywood. But it just seems like... everyone's a goofball. Like all the major stars are like kind of... They're just kind of like... They're like... I don't know. I shouldn't even say, you know.
Or gays. Oh, I'm just kidding. No. I just thought that sounded funny. It sounds something my dad would say.
Oh, yeah.
Let me ask you a quick question. You were married and then you got divorced?
Yeah, we, yeah.
That's what happened to me, too.
Yeah.
During that time.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And then now you single on the move?
Yes, I'm single and ready to mingle.
Yeah. Do you have kids or anything?
No kids. I got two dogs and a cat.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Share custody with them.
Yeah, I share custody with my dog's painting up there.
Oh, yeah.
With the ex-girl I went today before I interviewed Jason.
Yeah.
Do you ever go on Match.com?
Oh, no, man, no.
I was on, do you know Joe Hummel? You know Joe Hummel.
Yeah, I do, yeah. Okay.
Joe Hummel's the drummer in Liars and Saints.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm surprised he never told you. Because he was always the best promoter of that band. Yeah. And one day I had to tell him, like, hey, man, just like, I know you call it a super group because you think me and Casey are really awesome and Jeremy, but like, it sounds so retarded when you say that to Charlie Sexton. Like, no, dude, you haven't seen it. This is a super group.
It's a super group.
Yeah. And they're like, well, who's in it? Like, Johnny. Like, there's a fucking super group and me in it. No. So, anyway.
That's great.
Wait, I was just saying something, I was making a point. Oh, he told me, you know, get on Match.com or whatever. I was on maybe 12 hours. First of all, because I'm 46 and like when you fill out the thing and you see your, like your stats on paper, it's bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess I had a podcast then and stuff even. Yeah, I did. So throw that on top of like.
Yeah. So I fall into this category, eh?
And you're like, oh, this is like, who would go? I mean, who in their right mind would actually like wink or whatever it is that you do to that person? So I never got on it.
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry. I don't know.
You know, you can meet people in the real world, though. It's pretty neat. It's a pretty neat place out there. You know, our hours are such that, you know, I end up meeting night people, you know. I don't meet people with straight jobs quite often.
Nope.
You know. But, you know, sometimes, you know, I've worked straight, you know, day jobs and then, I always seem to have one, except for the last couple of years, but, that's a different world. Like the daytime people. It's kind of a different world.
Yeah, I don't live there.
Yeah, so.
So what's the Drake's website again?
It's thedrakesband.com.
Thedrakesband.com. Everyone get out there. What is the name of the album?
It's called The Mission.
Can you like email me some songs? I'll play them from the show.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything I'm missing, man?
I don't think so. Just that huge chunk of the middle of my life. That was the most fertile part. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, babe. Thanks for having me. A lot of fun.
Just got them four lanes of heart.
Yeah, Matt Giles. Love talking to that dude. My new friend. I really enjoyed seeing the band, too, the Drakes, the other night. That was great. I want to thank my friend Jason Swedberg for hooking that up. He was actually the guy that sent me a text. He was hanging out with Matt, and he wrote me, and he said, hey, buddy, have you had this guy on your show? And I said, no. And he's like, you got to get this guy on your show. I will introduce you. And he did. And there you go. So thank you, Jason. Thank you, Matt, for coming by. The Drakes, fantastic band. Ron Flint, John Bush, Cornbread. The whole gang. Great, amazing band. All right. Get out there and see the Drakes Tuesdays at the 1-to-1 bar. Let's do that. You know, you can look up their music online. They got a great website. They got music out there for you to listen to. So do that. The Drakes. While you're out there looking up the Drakes, get on iTunes. Subscribe to this podcast. You can also find us on Stitcher. You can like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? Get over there and like it. You'll see pictures of people coming up the day before the show. You'll get updates on people that have been on the show, like where they're touring, if they have a new album out, what their Kickstarter's doing, Pledge Music, whatever the hell people are doing these days. We're helping them out, and we're spreading the word. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Let's thanks again to Matt Giles. Thank you to Jason Swedberg for hooking this up. Listen, You're gonna wanna get your guitars fixed at some point. You're gonna wanna talk to Jason Swedberg. He's amazing. He's been fixing my guitars actually for years, but he goes in and out of doing it. Now he's back. He's back in the zone. He's fixing them. He fixed my Telecaster amazingly, man. It's kicking ass. Now he's got my Jazzmaster in the place. What am I doing? Jason Swedberg, man, find out what's going on. Write me. I'll send you to him. All right, let's do that. Hey, here's some more music from the Drakes. Thank you so much for listening. Let's get down.